great time for just leaving and doing things. And this morning, Justin and Noah have a baseball tournament down in Utah, so they're gone. And Joe's helping out a fellow church. He's preaching there. So we have a guest pastor with us again today. And John Whitaker was an instructor at Boise Bible College for 19 years. He was also a podcaster and an author. And let's give John a warm welcome here.
All right, good morning. It's good to be with you. I've preached here a handful of times, and so it's good to be back. Some of you I might know, some of you I may not know, but glad to be here. Want to mention a couple resources that might be helpful to you. Out in the lobby on the table by the entryway, there's a book that a friend of mine and I wrote called Following Jesus in a Politically Divided World. That might be useful. you can get it on Amazon, but I got a handful of copies out there. So on Amazon, it's $13. It's $10 out there. If you want to grab one of those, you think that's useful, you can throw some money in the basket. Also, he mentioned doing some podcast stuff. If you're interested in digging into the Bible and just studying it a little bit more in depth on your own or for the sake of teaching others, I'm creating a resource called the Listener's Commentary that's totally free online. And I just go through Bible books and teach them in depth, just like I did at the college for 19 years. In fact, I'll be teaching Romans at Boise Bible College this fall. There's 25 finished hours of Romans instruction online for free. So they're paying $1,000 for it at BBC, but you can have it for free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or my website, or whatever else that is. So you can check that out, Listener's Commentary, if you're interested in that, want to dig into that. All right. You guys have been studying through the book of James, I understand. And we are going to continue that today in James chapter 5. And to kind of get us started, how many of you like to wait? One, maybe, kind of. I don't know if mom and dad might agree, but, you know, we'll see. Waiting is not my forte. You know, when I'm in the grocery store and I'm buying just a handful of items because my wife sent me there, right? What do? Try to find the shortest line. And I might even jump lines if I think this line's going faster than that line, right? I'm driving and, you know, you're changing lanes. Like, this lane's moving faster than the other. I don't want to go slow, and don't make me wait. I got places to go, even if I really don't. I'm not good at waiting. In fact, yesterday, my wife and I were out running some errands. We're in the middle of moving, and life is unsettled. So we're running some errands and actually looking at some furniture for new house, and time got away from us. So it was lunchtime, so we had to swing in somewhere and get something to eat, swing into a place that we like to eat at, ordered our food. It seemed like the guy at the cash register was new. He was going slow. We sat down at our table, and it took longer than I thought it should. And I kept looking at my wife, and it was taking longer than we were running errands. We had things to do, and it took longer than I thought it should. I could feel the impatience beginning to rise in me, right? Waiting, not good at it. Anybody else with me on this? All right, there we go. Now the hands come up. Not good at waiting. And yet, there's huge benefits to learning to wait. Huge benefits. In the early 1970s, there was a famous study done at Stanford University with preschoolers and marshmallows. And the study basically was this. Each kid was sitting at a table with a marshmallow on the table in front of them. And one group was told, you know, they could eat their marshmallow whenever they wanted. And another group of kids was told, if you can wait for about 10 or 15 minutes, you'll get two marshmallows. And so they did the study. And then they actually, about 20 years later, they followed up with these kids. And the kids who had actually learned how to wait over the course of their life, who had learned the art of delayed gratification and not having to get everything right now, but wait for their desires to be satisfied, those kids, as they went through life and learned how to wait, actually had a higher degree of mental health. They were less anxious, less depressed, They were more successful in whatever jobs they found. They had higher SAT scores, all from learning how to wait, practicing delayed gratification. First heard about that study when my kids were small, and I'm like, that's important. So I try to teach my kids the fine art of delayed gratification and help them learn how to wait. Well, in James chapter 5, verses 7 through 12, the passage we're going to look at this morning, James gives us a series of instructions, and these series of instructions all revolve around this fine art of waiting. And in the original setting, with the original audience, they are, in fact, the preceding passage deals with this. They're poor peasant farmers, many of whom are tenant farmers working the lands of some wealthy landowner. They're being treated unfairly. They're not even always getting their paycheck. Life is not going smoothly. And James, in essence, tells them, I get it. It's hard. It's not the way you want it to be. Let's wait. Let's wait. And this is what James says. James chapter 5, verse 7. He says, therefore, be patient. That's language of waiting. Wait patiently. Patiently wait for something. Be patient, brothers and sisters, until, not just 10 or 15 minutes for your marshmallow, until what? Until the coming of the Lord. Be patient until the Lord should arrive. This word coming, there's several different words for go, come, and all that in the New Testament. This particular word became very commonly associated with the return of Jesus. And it was used in the broader language of the day for the arrival of a nobleman, a king, or somebody with clout or power who would show up at your city. And they would come with promises of peace and blessing and all that. And what James is saying is, we have a greater king than the emperor in Rome or the governor of our region. We have a more wealthy nobleman than that, and he's going to come bringing greater blessing than that. So wait, be patient until the Lord should appear, till he should arrive. Then he gives an illustration. He says, think about the farmer. Remember, a lot of these people are peasant farmers. They get farming. They were living in an agricultural society. Think about the farmer who waits for the precious produce of the soil. A lot of waiting goes into farming. You plant and you water and you wait and you hope. And think about this farmer who's waiting for the precious produce of the soil, being patient about it. Right? Hanging in there, taking his time, tending the ground, watering the crops, being patient about it until it gets the early rains, which would come late fall, and the later rains, which would come just before harvest. And he's waiting during this whole time, hoping and waiting for a good crop so that he can feed his family and provide for the village. So he says in verse 8, you too, be patient, just like that farmer. You're waiting. You be patient and strengthen your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is near. God works on a different timetable than us. 10 minutes late for my Euro sandwich from the Euro Shack yesterday, and I'm getting impatient. The coming of the Lord is near. Now, when James wrote that, it had been about 30 years since Jesus' death, burial, and resurrection. Now we're about 2,000 years. Near is different in the Lord's timetable than in our timetable. You wait. You be patient. And then James gives us some instructions of things not to do while being patient. When stress happens, it's really easy to get kind of snippy, right? And to get irritable. When things are hard, when you're unsatisfied, when life isn't the way you want it, it's really easy to kind of, begin to turn on each other. So James says, don't complain, brothers and sisters, against one another. Don't grumble. Don't murmur. Don't run each other down. Don't turn on each other in your fatigue and your impatience and the difficulty of life. Don't complain against one another so that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing right at the door. This is the flip side. the arrival of the Lord is going to happen soon, and it's going to bring blessing, and it's also going to bring judgment. It depends where you're at in that process. And part of what he means when he says the judge is standing right at the door is he's saying to you and I, look, you can be patient because he's going to sort it all out. You feel like you've been treated unjustly. You feel like life hasn't been fair. You feel like things aren't right. You're frustrated. You're tired. You feel like you want more out of life and you're unsatisfied. Hang in there. Be patient because the judge is right at the door and he will sort out the rights and the wrongs. He will hold accountable those who need to be held accountable. So you just wait on him and he'll sort it all out for you. The judge is right at the door. Then he gives some more examples. He says, as an example, brothers and sisters, of suffering and patience, take the prophets, the Old Testament prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. People like Jeremiah who got, thrown into a cistern and sunk into the mud, right? And they weren't listened to and God had called them and they were doing the Lord's work and they were treated unjustly and unfairly and wrongly and they hung in there and they stayed faithful to God. Look at them and people like them. And you be patient like they were patient, and you endure like they endure, because, verse 11 says, we count those blessed who endure, who were faithful over the long haul, who didn't quit, who persevered when it was hard and things weren't right. And then he gives a very specific example of one of these Old Testament characters who endured. He says, you've heard of the endurance of Job. If you're not familiar with it, you can read the story in your Old Testament. Job. Things did not go easy for Job. He was wealthy and well off and all looked good, and then all came crashing down around him. And he lost everything. And then his friends started blaming him for it. Well, if you surely had to do something wrong or else the Lord wouldn't let this happen to you. So they were really good comforters and counselors, right? It's your fault. Surely you're unrighteous. You must have done something wrong. Didn't go well. Even his wife turned on him. And then in the end of the story, what happens? He gets twice as much back as he had before. The Lord blessed him twice as much. And so you have heard the endurance of Job and you have seen the outcome, the telos, the end goal and the end result of the Lord's dealings, how the Lord blessed him and provided for him and blessed and rewarded his faithfulness, that the Lord is full of compassion and is merciful. Do you believe that? Do you believe that? That even if life right now isn't all you want it to be, even if there's things in your life that are less than ideal, even if right now it doesn't feel like everything's quite going, I mean, your life might be good, but it's not perfect, true? Even if it's good, you're still like, I know, but I wish, and I don't like, and I want, right? Do you believe that the end goal that the Lord has for us as his people is full of compassion and grace and mercy, that it'll be good? That's what James is saying to his original audience and to us. Wait patiently because you can trust the Lord that he has good things in store for you in the future. And not just the immediate future, the long-range future, when the Lord returns and sorts everything out and makes all things new. Trust him. Wait for that. Be patient until that day comes. Then he ends in verse 12 with this final little call to action. But above all, my brothers, don't swear, not like curse swear, like don't swear an oath. Don't swear either by heaven or by earth or with any other oath. But let your yes be yes and your no be no, echoing what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount. Live with integrity so that when you give your word, you don't have to cross your heart and hope to die, stick a needle in your eye, because people know they can count on you. They know that your word is good. They know that if you said you'll do it and you've shook on it, that's all they need from you. Because your word is good. You have so much integrity. So let your yes be yes and your no be no so that you don't fall under judgment. Now, what I want you to see out of this short little text in James is the emphasis on the future. Be patient till the coming of the Lord. Verse 8. The coming of the Lord is at hand. It's near. The judge is standing at the door, and someday he'll appear, and he'll sort everything out. The outcome, the end goal, is full of compassion and mercy. And you make sure that you're living with integrity and don't fall under judgment, that there is a future day coming when the king will arrive and he's going to sort out all the rights from the wrongs, and he is going to bless and reward his people, and he's going to make all things new. That's the promise that James makes this call to them and to us to wait patiently. Wait patiently. You're going to get something better than two marshmallows. Far better. Can you delay your gratification for that day? Can you wait for the final outcome of the Lord's dealings with mankind when he sorts everything out and makes everything right? Can you wait? That's the call he's giving us here. And let me just give one example that I think in a lot of ways parallels what's going on, what James is speaking to here. And it's an example from our American past with American slavery. For so many of the slaves in America, life was unfair. Life was far from satisfying. Life was far less than any human being should experience. So many mistreated, right? It was an awful experience for so many of them. And yet, as has been well documented, the songs that American slaves sang were deeply rooted in a vision of heaven. One of the most famous African-American spirituals is "Swing Low, Sweet Chariot." Sung by slaves in the 1800s as they waited, hoping for the judge to come and sort everything out. The chariot's coming forth to take me home. I'm going to go to a better place. But it's not the only one. Loads of these spirituals were just rooted in this vision of heaven. Let me read you some lyrics from another one. "Wait a little while, then we'll sing a new song. Wait a little while, and we'll sing a new song. Sometimes I get a heavenly view, then we'll sing a new song. And then my trials will be few, and we'll sing a new song." It's this vision, this heavenly view, this realizing like life right now isn't all it's cracked up to be, but God's going to sort it all out, and he's got something good in store. Or another one, "Way over in Beulah land, we're going to have a good time. Oh, we're going to walk them streets of gold. Oh, we're going to drink that heavenly wine." Right? This song that celebrates someday. Someday, I'm not going to be treated like this. Someday, my life's going to be good. Someday, the Lord's going to sort it all out. Do you believe that? That's the question for us. And one of the real challenges that I think we have in our current world is in America, at this stage of history, we have access to so many opportunities and access to so much stuff that our life is better in so many ways than people of former times. In fact, my wife and I had some friends for a long time, older couple who had lived in Boise since they would talk about ranchers going to downtown Boise on Saturday night and going to the Bucket of Blood Saloon. That's how old these people were. They've been around Boise a long time. They remember when Eustick was a separate town and Eustick Road was a dirt road that led to town, right? They had been around here a long time. And she always used to say that people talk about the good old days. Let me just tell you, they weren't all that good. And she knew. They had two toddlers die in a snowstorm in Idaho City when he was the principal of the school district up there in the early 1900s. She talks about having to, you know, wash clothes by hand on a regular basis and hang them on a line. I mean, life is easier in so many ways than it used to be. And we have access to so much stuff and so many opportunities that we think we should be able to get whatever we want. And we should be able to get it now. And so then when we get a little bit of dissatisfaction, or a little bit of discomfort, or a little bit of injustice, and we freak out as if the whole world's falling apart. And we're not always really good at waiting. But there is a new world coming. There is a new heavens and a new earth. And it's going to be better than anything that you could possibly imagine in this world. That your desires for love, joy, peace, justice are going to be satisfied in a way that you could never imagine. And they're going to be satisfied not just with the things of the earth. They're going to be satisfied with union with God in Christ, what we were made for in the very beginning. Do you believe that? It's really hard in the midst of life to be, you know, so busy with ordinary life and just going about our jobs and going about our responsibilities and taking care of all the things, and in the middle of all of that, to fix our gaze on the world to come, particularly when life overall is decent and we have access to so much stuff. But the slaves for whom life was so hard and life was anything but pleasant, they had to set their gaze on something in the future in order just to survive. And James's original audience was really in the same situation. And what James is saying to them and to us is, you need to learn to wait. Don't expect this world to meet all your desires. C.S. Lewis actually said, if you find within yourself desires that this world cannot satisfy, that's a sure indication that you're made for another world. And there is another world coming. And James is simply standing in a long tradition of biblical writers who speak of this other world. So let me just read from a couple Old Testament prophets who painted pictures and spoke to this desire for a world that satisfies all our longings. Here's one from Isaiah 25. It says this, "The Lord of heaven's armies will hold a banquet for all the nations on this mountain. And at this banquet, there will be plenty of meat and aged wine." Like, you know, we're used to just, you want meat, you just go down, you pick some up at the store, you throw it on the barbecue, and right? But meat was a rarity in the ancient world because you didn't have refrigeration. And so you bought meat and you cooked it right then. Rarely did you get it. So it was a big deal. So there's going to be this big banquet, and it's going to have all the meat you want, and it's going to have the best wine, aged wine, tender meat, choicest wine. On this mountain, he, God, will swallow up the shroud that is over all people, the woven covering that is over all the nations. He will swallow up death permanently. You won't ever have to worry about death anymore. There will be no more dying. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from every single face. The tears of loss, the tears of mourning, the tears of grief, that'll all be wiped away by the tender finger of the Lord. And he will remove his people's disgrace from the earth. Indeed, the Lord has announced it. And if he's announced it, do you think he's got the power and the ability and the faithfulness to bring it about? The Lord's announced it. At that time, they will say, look, here is our God. We waited for him, and he delivered us. Here is the Lord. We waited for him. Let's rejoice and feast and celebrate and party in the presence of the Lord. Why? Because he delivered us. We're going to celebrate his deliverance. It's this picture that Isaiah writes of there's going to come a day when the king's going to return, and he's going to throw a party like no other party, and he's going to make all things new, and we look forward to that day. Or again, Psalm 37. Psalm 37 is this psalm that wrestles with this question of looking around at the world and like, why in the world does it seem like the people who don't care about God and consistently do what's wrong, why do they get ahead? And those who try to be faithful to God, why does it seem like they just struggle to survive and barely get by? Why is that? Psalm 37 is wrestling with that question. And in that context, here's what the psalmist writes. Rest in the Lord. Wait patiently for him. Don't get upset because the one who's successful in his way, because the person who carries out his wicked schemes, cease from anger. Abandon wrath. Don't get upset because it only leads to evil doings. In other words, don't fret about, don't strive, don't write, and you're churning because it just doesn't seem fair. Life isn't fair. Don't do that because that just leads to evil doing. But evildoers will be eliminated. Evildoers will be eliminated. But those who wait for the Lord, they will inherit the earth. Those who wait for the Lord are going to inherit the whole earth. A brand new earth, a perfect earth in which everything is made right again. And the New Testament authors stand in this same vein, right, where they point towards, those who are faithful to God. Blessed are the gentle, for they will inherit the earth. They look forward to, as Peter says, a new heavens and a new earth in which righteousness dwells, in which everything is good and beautiful and right again. That's what they're looking forward to. And that's what they're pointing us forward to. And what we need to learn to do as God's people is, in the midst of the present, however good, difficult, imperfect it might be, however that your current life is, whatever it's like, this mixture of good, bad, and ugly, and everything else, right? Whatever it is, learning to live in this present in view of the future. And wait, delay your gratification. This world as it currently is, broken, fallen, less than ideal, cannot satisfy every single desire of your heart. Can you wait in view of the world to come? Can you trust that God's going to send his son, and on that day, he'll sort out all wrongs and all rights, and evildoers will be eliminated, and all things will be made new? Can you wait? A pastor named Cameron Cole wrote a book called Heavenward, and that book grew out of this experience. On November 10th, 2013, Cameron's three-year-old boy expressed how much he just thought Jesus was incredible and how much he loved Jesus. And can we get in a car and go see Jesus? He's 3 years old. Can we get in a car and go see Jesus because he's so incredible? That was November 10th, 2013. That night, perfectly healthy, Cameron's little three-year-old boy went to bed and did not wake up the next morning. And in the midst of his grief and in the midst of his crisis, it drove Cameron back to the text. He's a pastor. He says, but it drove me back to the text, and my mentor became the Apostle Paul. What I learned from the Apostle Paul was heaven and eternity should affect everything in my present. And he wrote this book called Heavenward, calling all of us to learn to live in the present in light of our eternal future and how that changes everything. And that's very much what James is saying to you and I. He's saying, wait patiently. Don't try to squeeze every possible good thing out of this life because it's not going to work anyhow. Don't try to sort out all the wrongs from this life and get your own revenge. Don't do it. Leave all that to the Lord. Wait patiently. Someday, the King's going to come. And when that day comes, all things will be made right and all things will be made new. Have you seen the end goal of the Lord's dealings? That they're good, compassionate, and merciful. And when we look at Isaiah or Psalm 37 or some of the Old Testament passages, guess what? You have an advantage over the original audience of Isaiah or over the psalmist. You have an advantage. Why? Because the Lord already came. Came once. And he laid down his life for us on the cross. And so you know that he literally loves you to death. And therefore, you can trust. You can trust that he's faithful to his promises. You can trust that he will come again. You can trust that he intends to sort everything out and make all things new. So wait patiently, therefore, until the coming of the Lord, because his coming is at hand. Someday, everything will be right. So we're gonna take communion. And if you did not grab a little cup and bread on your way in, I think the ushers have some baskets and they can help you out. You can just put your hand up and they can make sure you have one of these. But what I want to do before we take this together, got some over here. Before we take this together, so I want to just give you a second just to maybe reflect for a moment. What is it that you're living for? Take a second maybe to think about, are you trying to make everything perfect in this life, or are you willing to wait patiently for what Jesus has in store in the future? So take just a second and reflect on this theme of waiting for your King to arrive. Thank you. And then as you're reflecting on that, take a moment perhaps to just confess to the Lord that you need him and how dependent you are upon him. Confess maybe any way that you've been unfaithful to him or you've trusted in other things to satisfy your soul, and then thank him for his mercy and his grace. So take a minute just to confess anything you need to confess to the Lord and thank him for his grace.